MNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 FM. Thank you for tuning in. This show is called Art in Your Ear, and we're going to start out with, we're just going to rock for a little bit.
I'm broke, but I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm fat, but I'm healthy, yeah. I'm high, but I'm grounded. I'm sane, but I'm overwhelmed. I'm lost, but I'm hopeful, baby. And what it all comes down to is that everything's gonna be fine, fine, fine. 'Cause I go one hand in my pocket and the other one is giving a high five.
Well, good afternoon. Kicking it off with the Alanis Morissette cover by the Smith Street Band, Hand in Pocket. My name is Joellen Schilke. I am the hostess who loves you absolutely the mostest. I'm so excited that you're out there listening. Thank you so much for being part of this wonderful radio station. If you enjoyed The Skinny, if you missed The Skinny, if you want to listen to The Skinny again, you can go to our website, WMNF.org, and go to the broadcast schedule and hit them up on the archives or download them as a podcast. I want to let you know that I've got some programming notes for you before we start the show. Well, more important, let me tell you who's coming on, because it's such a good show for you today. We get all the bonus points in the world for having a great show. Artist Rico Gatson is coming on with curator, Christian, I'm going to mess up your name, with curator Christian Viveros Fuane, and then maybe Leslie Elsasser, to talk about his show, Visible Time. It's opening up tonight at the USF Contemporary Art Museum, and it is a stunning show, and I I just cannot wait to hear from people who have gone to see it. So that is pretty exciting. Before that, though, I want to let you know a few things going on here at the station. Program changes kicked in this week, and so we have some new shows on the air. If you go to our website, WMNF.org, you can read up on some of the new programs. Though Fridays overall stay the same, there's a new show earlier on Fridays. Down and Dirty started today, but this show will have a big change. We are not going to be living in the archives past 1 week anymore because I had a choice to either get rid of the music and the poetry or keep the music and be able to stay on for years or keep the music and the poetry and just flip over each week. And I went with keeping the music and poetry. But I'll let you know, you will be able to follow up on the show past that week, but I'll let you know about that when that's all set up. So no more podcasts. If you are interested in getting more information, please do send me an email, Joellen, J-O-E-L-L-E-N, Joellen at WMNF.org, and I will happily send you that information. Last but not least is next week is our fund drive. And so we are going to have to raise a couple $1,000s. So I do hope that you will, that our wonderful current listener supporters, thank you, and new listener supporters, give some money to this station and to this show so we can stay on and stay strong. Public radio does not play advertisements. Public radio does not have to, especially WMNF, does not have to answer to any corporate overlords. We answer to our listeners. And so please do send $5 a month, $10 a month, $25, $2,500, whatever you can afford, please do that. All right, we'll be back in a moment with our guests. I'm going to start off because at Rico's exhibition, there's this amazing 88-foot mural of Zora Neale Hurston, one of my favorite writers. So, of course, he got me there. So we're going to play Ola Dora's song, Zora, and be back in just a couple of minutes with the guests. Thank you so much for tuning in to Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5 FM.
Zora, where my baby's sugar. Write me a story and tell me, well, my baby.
You know, one of the things I love about Zora Neale Hurston is that I thought she wrote about love and relationships better than almost any other writer that I've read. And so I have 100 different excitements for welcoming to the studio Rieker Getzen and Christian, say it right properly for me, please.
Viveros Fauné.
Oh, it just sounds so much better when you say it than I say it. And then lurking in the corner in case we need her is Leslie Elsasser to give us the info. Welcome to the airways of Art in Your Ear. Rico, your show, Making Time Visible, opens up tonight at the USF Contemporary Art Museum. So it's a... It's not really a survey. There's the mural, though, 88 feet by 16 feet mural. It's stunning and amazing. And then there's works in there that are on the newer end, and then there's works on the older end. So there's the two different walls of icon series. There's some sculpture and then film. And then there was one room I didn't get into, so that's a mystery to me what was in there. And there's a couple of videos, and there's one I just want to start off with. You know, we consume media in so many ways. You know, I have right in front of me, I have 1, 2, 3, including my phone, 4 screens right here, and everybody has a screen in their pocket. Is there a correlation between what you're consuming and how you are processing it, and then how it sort of comes out in visible form?
So first of all, I just want to say that the layout of the exhibition is it's a loop. Mm-hmm. So you enter, and you can enter from either side when you come to the museum, but on the right side is the gallery that has the videos, and so you can enter through there. And we're sort of thinking about that as like entering into like obviously a darkened space because there's video being projected, and moving through around the back and into the side that has the mural and the works on paper and some sculpture. So we're thinking about like the progression of moving from dark to light, or from moving image to static image.
But, and from small, from small into this blossoming.
To large.
Right, yeah.
As in the mural, the large mural.
And that's something I didn't even think about, so thank you bringing that into it. But so is that also part of your sort of your internal practices, is understanding how you want the work to be experience? I mean, because once your work is out there, you can't control what people feel about your work or get from it, but you still have a lot of ways to control things. And it sounds like you guys can be like, oh, well, we can control, like we can sort of create this narrative or start this storytelling for people. Is that part of what you're doing here? And is that part of what you like to do when people have the opportunity to see your work?
Yeah, well, again, I have no control over how the viewer experiences the work but there are certain things that I want to sort of like convey it in the work that I, said is like goals, I mean, if you will, for lack of a better word. But, the one thing that I think that in the painting or the works on paper or the mural even is that one experiences right away the color, pattern, and energy. And so, so that's something that's occurring there. The videos also have music, and they're also like very visually active. And so, I think that like formally, those are the things that kind of come up first, so you get the pattern, you get the color, in all of the work actually, so I think that like if the viewer kind of can enter in, hopefully the viewer enters that way. And then they can begin to, or other things begin to come to the surface, like content, for instance. There's a piece, there's a video that's titled Four Stations, and it has a very beautiful soundtrack, which is Alice Coltrane, from her first album, I believe, Journey in Satchitananda, and with the beautiful horn work by Pharoah Sanders, and So, you know, so I think that that's something that hits you. I mean, it's very sort of present in the space when you come into the museum, mm-hmm. in the gallery. But then, you know, the video is about like, well, I took the same journey that Emmett Till was taking on his, you know, during his last moments mm-hmm. on Earth, and filmed, you know, right. with the handheld camera. And so, you know, so I think that some of that...
Can I stop you there for a moment?
Sorry.
Because that must, to the decision to do that and to want to create work around that already has an emotional impact. But then to actually do it, to know that this young man, 14 years old,
yeah, 14.
This not even young man, this boy, you know, was murdered for nothing, you know, or for hatred, whatever. But I don't mean to do that, but then to decide as a grown man, I am going to walk his steps. And when you're doing that, do you want to be experiencing everything that you're going through internally, or do you need to put that in a place and work? Like, how do you, as an artist, how do you do that?
Again, this is, I'll speak directly to that experience. I had the opportunity to go down and, you know, visit these sites. I'm not trying to retell the story, like the history. It's really just about like, attempting to interpret, you know, or to express, you know, something that is, kind of on a spiritual level that goes like beyond, like, you know, the sort of container of the story, because we all know the story, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, not everybody does, but, you know, a lot of us do. It's pretty much in the collective consciousness at this point. Mm-hmm. So it's really trying to tease out something that's like really, that's beyond, you know, how, you know, it's art.
Right, exactly.
It's really about self-expression and trying to like create or do something that's transformative and allows for the story to even hopefully be unpacked in a different way.
And that's why, and bringing that, because I think that there is an idea, there is a movie, I think, you know, one of the streaming channels had a movie recently about Emmett Till and his mother, and you know, so it's right there. And it's easy, you know, it's easy as a white woman looking at something, this horrible thing that happened decades ago, and be horrified and all that, but to be able to experience the emotions in a fresh way about it and see kind of the atmosphere and the surroundings about it, and then create art about that is probably why you're, you know, a good artist and people want you to do shows around. But it's a challenge to yourself, I would think. And so I'm going to segue and then bring Christian in if it's appropriate. But is that something that you do, is challenge yourself on this? I mean, I write. I have no visual art skills. It breaks my heart. So the way I problem solve is through writing. I problem solve and I understand. I struggle to understand the world. And the way I do it is I have to sit down and write, you know. And so exactly. Is this what you're doing with your work, with your hands and your eyes and your mind, is understanding the world or trying to understand the world?
Yeah, totally. You know, the world through like history, the world through like, you know, any number of ways that one can process that. But, you know, in the case of the challenge, it, you know, it's always, it has been and is always going to be a challenge that sort of take on really difficult history, whether it's portraying like someone like Zora Neale Hurston, or attempting to sort of like make work about, you know, the murder of this, you know, young
child.
Boy. So child, yeah, even better. Or, you know, but also like, you know, just trying to make work that's celebratory, that isn't sort of, you know, reduced to, you know, something that's, you know, it's all a challenge.
The Icon series, amazing. And again, as I told you, I love Radiance. You know, I mean, Radiance is going back forever, and I will show you that picture of natural radiance. And what it does, I mean, there's this celebratory quality to both this huge, beautiful Zora Neale Hurston mural, but also the They're money things, aren't they? Pencil and photo and all these different things, colored pencil and stuff like that. You know, that there's this energy radiating out of these icons, you know, radiating out. There's so much activity in the work. Like, you walk in there and there's just this, like, bzzz, you know, like that. Sometimes it's just black radiance, and sometimes it's a couple of colors, and sometimes it's many colors. And so I'm going to ask you a couple practical questions about that work. And dear listeners, I'm talking with Rico Gadsden and Christian. I'll let you talk eventually.
Viveros Fauné.
Thank you. About Rico's show that opens up tonight at the USF Contemporary Art Museum called Making Time Visible. I'm sorry, I can't, obviously. And that is a phone, the flashing light's the phone. So don't be scared, we're not being invaded or anything. So do you know, like, when you start, are things planned out ahead of time, or do you, like, okay, I'm going to do Dick Gregory, and then I'm going to use these colors, you know, I'm going to do it this way, or is it, while you're doing it, is there wiggle room when you're doing the work?
Yeah, the palette is very specific, but it's, you know, a certain number of colors that I've been working with. It started out mostly like more of a Pan-African color palette, and it sort of expanded out from there. And but what I tend to do is decide on the person, the portrait. You know, the only rule that I have with it is the portraits are usually a people that passed away, that have transitioned. So I'm essentially memorializing their energy. And so, like, again, you describe the lines radiating out from the center of the figures in most cases, not always, but in describing energy. And so I make decisions, like, you know, about the individual person. But again, it's coming from a very specific color palette.
But so, if I remember correctly, Rico, the second rule that you told me you had was essentially making the figure significantly smaller than the radiating energy.
In the rays,
right? At whatever scale, whether it's, you know, at a very modest sort of scale, or at 88 by 16 feet.
But in a way, I don't want to say radiation. I know that makes it different.
Pejorative.
But the radiating out of it makes the person so much bigger. Yeah. Like, it's sort of like, you know, the... I'm trying to think. Was it the Alice? You know, that it takes, and then all of a sudden it's there. I felt that it wasn't acknowledging. It was acknowledging that we are so much more than just this container.
Yes.
You know, that we're like,
absolutely,
out there.
And it's influence.
This is why I'm glad we don't have video in here, because I'm making a fool of myself. but yeah. So now, do you blend the colors, or do you have, like, this is just one color? Because the colors are so beautiful.
Yeah, it's, I don't blend.
Really? You know, just like,
within the color, but you know, but the colors are all obviously sort of working together, you know, to try to define the, or define the whole of the, you know.
Did you, when I was reading, when I smartly finally read, you know, biography and stuff like that, it seemed that when you started at, you know, college, you're like, I'll be a graphic designer. And they're like, oh, hell no, I'm going to go for fine arts and stuff like that. Okay. But there is that sort of super, just such a glorious understanding of scale and, you know, space and empty space and stuff like that. You teach also. Is that something that you feel that you're able to teach students, or is this something that is, you know, it's in, like, that seems so innate, or is that something that someone can learn? Because I know this is a left turn, but it's so beautiful.
No, I started out in studying graphic design. So there's layout, I would say, but pattern. But you know, like, of course, you know, it's something that I think that I try to sort of encourage, you know, through teaching,
right.
You know, but.
Well, I want to bring Christian in, and I'm very curious, Christian, as to when you were first looking at Rico's work. One, what made you think, like, oh yeah, we're doing this? And two, how this amazing mural became part of the idea of doing this show?
Well, the first question is kind of funny because I've been following Rico's work. We've known each other for over 20 years.
Oh, great.
You know, we sort of came up in the same neighborhood in Brooklyn, which seemed to basically at that point house just about every interesting young artist in the country, or at least we thought so. We've been friends, but have not managed to work together in a solo project until this one. The Icon series that Rico began, the first one you did was what, about 2007. Okay,
yeah.
Right, 2007, has grown in scale, right, in Rico's practice since. And so, you know, I was aware of the fact that he'd done these murals, and frankly, I was intimately aware of the fact that he'd done these murals because up in 167th Street in the Bronx, very close to the Bronx Museum, there's 8 of them,
yeah,
honoring a number of folks, and they are just spectacular. And as I've mentioned to Rico before, you know, they, in a time where the monumental or anything that has to do with monuments is a tough discussion, right? Is a tough set of conversations. We have a lot of monuments coming down. We have very few going up. We have very little consensus about what should be monumentalized. Those 8 monumental pieces in the New York subway, in a very public place, get so much love. They're spectacularly sort of, they're not just brilliant. There is a consensus that sort of grew around them that they were loved. So, you know, Viveros, take note, right? And so, you know, I went and internalized that. Rico was in a show about the visualization of poverty as a phenomenon at CAM this last year, Poor People's Art. And I wanted to, like, have that essentially be a stepping stone to another project, which is essentially where we are right this minute. Yeah.
There was when I knew that you're coming on the show, I texted a friend of mine that lives in the Bronx, and my family, I grew up just below that area. I saw a family up there, and I was like, do you know these? And my cousin, in a minute, oh, I love those. And then sent me all these pictures on her phone with her kids in front of them and people like that, you know. And it was just, and I think for, especially for her family, which is a mixed race family of 3 different ethnicities, you know, it was so powerful to have that, you know, to be able to go to work every day and see that and stuff like that. So it was really exciting. And dear listeners, after the show, I will post some of those pictures up on our show page and on our Facebook group so you can see them. We're talking about visualizing, God, I keep on losing it, visualizing time. So I want to totally switch gears and talk a little bit about the sculptures, the totem.
Panels.
Thank you.
Totems. Yeah, we call them.
I haven't written down. Unfortunately, I can't read my writing. But so the totems have these wonderful sort of deconstructed, reconstructed, the elements and the components. And even within the Icon series, and especially within the videos, there's this sense of taking pieces and putting them back together. And that reconstruction sort of asks all these questions, like, is this what you thought it was? Is this what you thought it was? So in looking at them, and Leslie and I were talking, you know, that within these totems, there are symbols of you know, there's all sorts of symbols of hatred and also symbols of love and stuff like that. So will you talk a little bit about even, and I don't know if it's a scientific thing, but the idea of how you want people, like eyes, to actually see things, that you put colors next to each other, kind of like the color field painters, you know, that cause vibrations and stuff like that. So will you talk about what images you're sort of deconstructing and reconstructing in those totems, and kind of what, how you were doing that?
Yeah, well, the painting is more intuitive, I like to say, and the way that I'm utilizing color, I think that, well, the title is Visible Time, so I'm thinking about specifically jazz. I'm thinking about, like, you know, improvisation. These are things that inform, like, how I make, you know, how I sort of make decisions about, like, what's going to be next. The shapes are abstract. I mean, they're kind of derived. I mean, they're different shapes different patterns that are occurring in the panels and in the painting. But so this whole notion of trying to find, like, you know, the way that jazz musicians would improvise and play, and, you know, so there's a structure, you know, it's not just coming from anywhere, but then it's like trying to find, like, that sort of, you know, just trying to find the groove, trying to find, like, you know, something that's occurring improvisationally, for lack of a better word.
Do you play music?
I don't play. I'm purely visual.
Right.
But I love music, and I listen to a lot of music. In fact, Albert Eiler is an artist that, you know, was, you know, pushing the boundaries, the limits of, like, you know, sound and mm-hmm. so on. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I wanted to mention, I mean, so there's seven totems basically sort of leaning against the wall. Otherwise, there would be paintings if they were basically put sort of flat on the wall, just to give it an immediate descriptor. But Mark Fredericks, who's a brilliant sort of, like, research person, and many other things, because he wears multiple hats, as we all do over at the museum, in the workbook, which, by the way, is free for anyone who comes to the museum.
Not free to own, just free to see.
Free to take, man. Free to own. It's totally theirs.
Just take a totem home with you.
No, not the totem. No, the workbook. No, you can't take the totem home. No, you might have to talk to Rico, or at least Rico's dealer.
You're going to have to get through me, babe.
Exactly. No, you can take the workbook, meaning the catalog. That's what we call them. But Mark had this sort of very cool observation where he actually sort of, you know, likened the seven totems to seven jazz musicians, which mm-hmm. is obviously sort of clear. It's like, you know, it's the next sort of, like, leap.
Yeah.
You know, they're actually figures sort of off the wall, right? And because you see all this improvisation in each one of the units, as it were, you can definitely see them as,
so,
like,
improvisation,
combo.
Though, exists within a context, because a musician will be able to do a really good improvisation when they are surrounded with musicians that are able to work along with them. So I'm going to extrapolate that to your work when you have these totems that are working sort of that. Do you work with music on?
I do.
Going to say.
Music has been a very important part of my studio practice.
Music is throughout the show.
Exactly.
Like, there's music everywhere in the show. There's visual music. And that's what, when you kept on saying, you know, making time visible, I was thinking, well, light years, time is light. Time is energy. This is all, you know, it's just our human frailties that doesn't allow us to see exactly what time is and what all this light and you know, colors are. Because I was thinking, like, looking at them, there's these relationships between the totems. And so the improv in that would have been improving off each other. You know, did you make them one at a time, or did you make them?
Yeah, they're all individually made, and then I sort of arrange them. But I'm working on each of them at essentially the same time.
That's what I meant. Yeah, that there was I wanted to touch him so badly. I was So, dear listeners, don't touch them. I know it'd be very bad, but they are so, you know, they're not painterly, you know, there's not painterly strokes. And in your work, there's not, you know, the hand of the artist in a way. That's the interesting part. There's, you know, the hand of the artist is almost a second degree thing. It's not like, oh, I want you to see that I worked on this. You know, it's
the work. You don't see brush strokes.
Right. Yeah.
Per se. I mean, in some cases you do, but it's very much about the hand, you know, but because it's hard edged abstraction, like, you know, it's not like, so it's tight, mm-hmm. you know, not loose,
right?
You know, but hopefully not uptight, you know. But one thing that I wanted to also share is just the notion of, like, you know, there's a vibration that's occurring, you know, across the different works in the exhibition that also applies to the film. Or the videos, you know, so that's something that I think about, like, energy, vibration, rhythm, you know, mm-hmm. and so that all relates back to music as far as I'm concerned.
Do you know when you have an idea for something, do you know automatically kind of what medium it will be expressed in, that this is a two-dimensional, this is a video, this is a three-dimensional, or do you need to work on it for a while?
Yeah, usually, like, the videos are span, like, a 30-year time period. So I haven't made a video for a while. So I think the most recent was 2018, right, which is Four Stations.
That's the one that's in the lobby area? God, I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I was so in everyone's way. I was like, get out of my way. I want to see this. It was very, very beautiful.
Yeah, but the painting, I usually have a plan, but it consists of mostly just, like, you know, trying to follow, like, from the prior to the next and so on and so forth. It's just like building.
This is so wonderful.
Building blocks.
So I want to take a break because I want to mention, too, that there are some different events happening along with this. And Leslie, I am going to ask you to belly on up to that microphone. And the museum is going to be showing movies.
Three films. So we'll have the first one on June 22nd, and that is Foxy Brown. And on July 13th will be The French Connection. And on the 27th of July will be the Do the Right Thing. And these films will be shown in the film room with popcorn festivities. But the important thing is all the films have something to do with Rico's work.
Right.
And we'll introduce that during the film. So come on out.
I was hard selling Leslie on Foxy Brown last night. It's one of my favorite movies.
It's a great film.
It is such a great film. So thank you so much. So when you were, you know, when you're doing this, and this is for both Christian and Rico. So when you have an exhibition like this, you know, you're already sort of going outside of a traditional box by having an 88-by-16-foot mural put up there. And I want to talk about Zora in a minute. And then all these different things. Are there, you know, there's also just this huge space. And I do want to mention there's a gospel, gospel
right.
musicians playing tonight.
Yep.
They're in that huge space. But, you know, that's a luxury of that space. Did you know... had you been to the museum? Did you come down for the group show?
Yeah, I came down. I was in the show prior that Christian curated, Poor People's
Art.
And so I, at the same time, I did a site visit. And so I was aware of, like, the size and the scale.
And so when you know that, like, how in your head do you know what, like, how did you two sort of talk about how you wanted the show? Because that is, I mean, it felt... to me, as someone who goes to a lot of art shows and loves it, and, like, the best time of day is when I'm in a room full of art, the luxury of being able to look at things so well. So I want to talk a little bit about that decision to create, to lay out the show this, because I really love how the show's laid out.
Well, you know, my end of things was the easy part. You know, I threw a couple ideas out there that, you know, either Rico said no or he, like, you know, check the box. But we started out with the idea of wanting to do two things. One is to do, you know, essentially what's a mini survey of his video work, because it's the among the first stuff I saw.
Yep.
And that work relates intimately to everything that Rico's put up on a wall, you know. And then the other was to essentially sort of like, well, do this mural and do it in a way that was expansive and monumental and spectacular and impressive and any other sort of like maximalist superlative adjective you can find. But to have enough room to where you could actually really take it in. Because if you do something at 88 feet indoors, you need to be able to back up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And not be running into other work, no matter how good it is.
Right.
So, you know, essentially we made, you know, I think a very neat decision. And by neat, I mean precise, you know, to have, you know, a small group of the icon works from which, by the way, the larger monumental pieces come, and then the totems on the other wall. But like I said, I have the easy part. Generally, curators have the easy part. It's the artists that have to execute.
So, Rico, what was the reason for Zora Neale Hurston being the mural?
Yeah, well, one of the things we decided from the outset was that we would do somebody from Florida. I did a mural prior in Birmingham, and which portrayed the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth. So that, like, you know, is precedent for this mural. So I wanted to do the same thing here. And so Zora Neale Hurston was somebody that I was depicted in some of the work on paper, mm-hmm. earlier works. I think I used that image a couple times. And so, you know, it was a pretty natural, like, sort of decision to do her. She's from Edenville. She wasn't born there, but she grew up there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it, you know, I was, of course, I am a fan of the work. So, you know, it just made, it made sense, you know, to
right.
me. So, yeah.
There, we had a couple of listeners writing in and lots of compliments to you. And one of our listeners wanted to know, who are the artists that influenced you or that are kind of touchstones for you?
So many. But, yeah, anyone from Saul LeWitt, Ellsworth Kelly, Adrian Piper. Yeah, there's so many artists. Mm-hmm. Like Carmen Herrera.
But just in mentioning those four names,
yeah.
you know, Rico's gone from, like, hard-edge abstraction to, like, hard, you could even call it hard-edge conceptualism. And the one thing I actually sort of like want to share and underscore is that Rico is one of these artists, and they're not in great abundance, who do both of those things well and together, right, seamlessly. It's a phenomenon. I like eye candy, and I like work with content. He does eye candy with content. You know where I'm going? That's really the deal.
I know, that's true. That is kind of my sweet spot, too.
It's everyone's sweet spot. You know, it's perfect.
So that is wonderful. We're running out of time. I hate this. Before I go on, is there anything that I have not asked you guys about that you want to make sure people know about this show? I mean, people can look up the times and place and stuff like that. We'll get that out there, but.
Just that tomorrow, I think, is going to be. Tonight is going to be an absolute. it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And we've got Vanessa Law and her band, essentially doing a couple of gospel numbers mm-hmm. in the museum, and we just think it's going to be a fantastic sort of walkthrough and opening event.
You know, Florida, of course, is unfortunately getting national and international attention for our attacks, both on. Not both, including on people of color, especially black people in the state and all over, and especially people who belong to the LGBTQ+ community. And Zora Neale, you know, fits those. And, you know, to come to a state knowing that, you know, I mean, New York is not perfect. I grew up in New York. It's not a perfect place. But I think people hopefully feel safer there, you know, in being, living their lives and stuff right now than I, certainly a lot of people down here do. Was that, or not was that, when you were choosing Zora and working on that and designing it, how, or does any of like that atmosphere, the political atmosphere, the cultural atmosphere, is there an impact in there? Does it seep in, or do you need to kind of put a moat around your work a little bit so you can focus? How does that affect what you do?
Yeah, well, I tend to stay away from being demonstrative in terms of the politics because it's just such a difficult space to negotiate. So, like, I used to do politics more explicitly mm-hmm. in the work, but now I'm doing, you know, beauty, love and light, and hopefully it touches upon things that matter to people.
The presence, in real time. Yes. I mean, the presence of those people. I mean, I don't remember everyone I saw, but you know, my dad worked with Dick Gregory. My dad was his money manager for a while, you know, and so to see Dick Gregory and see these people that that either I grew up listening to or discovered as an adult, you know, and to see these icons. And there were people, I think there were one or two icons. It's like, who's that? Like, I need to go find out more, which bad on me. So that in itself is political by putting these people there and then saying these are icons. You know, there are icons and these are icons also. And I really appreciated that. Like, I really am thrilled for that. You know, especially for it to be on a university campus, that was pretty big too.
Yeah,
black cultural icons who also of course, are major American cultural icons.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, and that's what it is. It's not the name of, you know, they're not, it's not the Black Icons series. Yep. It's just the Icons series, correct, which I love. So we are, we're running out of time. Anything coming up next for you that you want to make sure people know about, or look, is there a show or website or anything?
A lot of things in the works, some that I can't talk about because they're still developing. But, you know, I will say that I'm very excited about doing a project here, well, at the USF with the graphic studio.
Oh, nice.
Graphic studio, which we hope, which will be a print or prints that,
oh my God,
that will hopefully come out or be ready in the very near future.
Well, God, please do let me know when that happens.
Sooner than later.
Right? So let me know, because I would love to share the word. And, you know, I mean, we always get texts and emails during the show, but we're getting a lot of texts and emails. So this is really resonating with people. And then coming up at the USF CAM?
We have Native America in Translation, a show that is curated by Wendy Redstar, is a terrific sort of indigenous American artist, from August 25 to December 2nd.
Okay.
Right.
So people have lots of time to see this, and they'll have lots of time to see this show.
Correct.
Up at USF, and then there's the movies and things like that. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Oh, my God, you guys.
I covered it.
So thank you so much for coming in. I followed you on Instagram. And, of course, you're, you know, there's lots of galleries that claim you and stuff like that. But it seems like Instagram is the best way to see your work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. So, dear listeners, I will share all of this after the show. If you look at our social media, you can find us at either Joe Schmellen or Art in Your Ear. And, of course, the page on WMNF.org, Art in Your Ear. And if you are on Facebook, we have a Facebook group, and you'll be able to see a lot of stuff in the Facebook group and find out all sorts of things about it. That's where I dump all the good stuff in there. So I hope you will join us. Look for Art in Your Ear, WMNF, and then join the group. Rico, thank you so much. Christian, thank you so much. Leslie, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I do hope that you come back to the area and do lots of shows so I can interview a whole bunch of times. So I had so much music. I have way too much music for the show. Now we chatted, and so we have even less time. So I can either go, I've got two covers. I'm going to go with this one. I told you guys at the beginning of the show that I'm going to rock out. So we are indeed going to rock out. Lenny Kravitz recorded this song the night after, or the night he heard that Harry Belafonte had passed. And so this is the beautiful song, kind of in his beautiful Lenny Kravitz style, How Long Have You Been Blind? Played here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5 FM.
Trouble in the city, trouble in the countryside. The car you're not using anymore? It's seen a lot of sunsets. Give it a new life and help WMNF by donating it. WMNF accepts all types of vehicles, including cars, trucks, boats, and more. It's easy, and it could mean hundreds of dollars in support for WMNF. Learn more at WMNFcar.org.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening today. I have a couple things I want to let you know about going on in the area. Hey, bird lovers, including me, bird lovers, over there at the Tampa Bay History Center, they have a beautiful exhibition. It's called Etched Feathers, Art for the Whole Flock. It's highlighting local birds, the history of printmaking, and Florida's natural beauty. What is not to love about that? It seems so gorgeous. I might go after the show today to go look at it. So it runs, it's open. It runs through October 15th. It's at the Tampa Bay History Museum, and that is located, I should have opened the website. There we go. The Tampa Bay History Museum is located right there in downtown, beautiful downtown Tampa, and they've got lots of stuff that you can check out on them and go online. They are located at 801 Water Street, Tampa, Florida. 33602 if you're putting it in your UPS. Also going on, last minute news, is that there is a dance thing. Let me see, where's that thing that came by and dropped this off? The Tampa City Ballet has Dance Now this weekend. It's their first annual cultural dance festival, and it is tomorrow, Saturday, June 3rd, at Waterworks Park there in downtown Tampa. It sounds really amazing. And they have all different types of dance styles within the region and making all these interactive, beautiful things. There's a ballet, there's children's dance, there's a music truck. There's so many different things. So you can check that out. Let's see, there's flamenco dancing. There's the BFA students from USF. There's Native American dancers and educators, Jansen Dance Project. They're awesome. Just all these different things. So if you want more information, you can go online to tampacityballet.org. I also want to mention that at the Woodson Museum, they're opening up an exhibition that from their collection called African American History, Resilient, Relentless, and Revolutionary. And that is at the Woodson Museum. It opens up this weekend. You can check that out. The Woodson Museum is located at 2240 9th Avenue South in beautiful St. Petersburg. There's also going to be open during the art walk next week, so you can check all that out. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being out there. Thank you so much for being part of WMNF. As I said at the beginning of the show, we have a fun drive next week. I think we're going to have guests also. I'm trying to get Chad in here, maybe. So we have a fun drive next week. We have to raise a ton of money. If you like this show, if this show has ever done anything good for you, please consider donating to this show to keep us strong in this great time slot and able to talk about art throughout the area. You are listening to WMNF Tampa, Art in Your Ear on WMNF Tampa. My name's Jerilyn Chilkey. Thank you very, very, very much for being part of WMNF. I can't wait to talk to you next week. I hope you have a great week. And as other people here say on the station, I think of Duncan, be kind to yourself, be kind to other, be kind to animals. Bye-bye now.
Childhood living is easy to do. The things you do.